Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our telephone talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you listening this morning. We're also pleased to welcome back to the show Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He is with us once a month on a Monday, and we talk about home maintenance. So if you got some kind of problem, something needs to be fixed, you need a little advice on how to go about it, Hank knows a lot about all the various pieces and parts of the single-family home, and I'm sure he would be happy to try to help you out. All you have to do is pick up the telephone and call us. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Also, we have a toll-free line, so that means if it would be a long-distance call, you may use that number and we'll pay for the call. That's 800-222-9455. Also, we want to thank Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors for its support of this program, Focus 580. Overhead Doors is pleased to support public radio in central Illinois on behalf of its customers and business associates. Welcome back.
Good to be here.
Well, it must be a lot of people now have projects that they've been putting off, and now's the time they're looking for advice because the phone lines are starting to light up, and we'll start right in Champaign, and that's line number one.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have a plumbing problem. We have an upstairs bathroom where everything collects into what's apparently a 3-inch copper pipe, which goes into a brass fitting into a 4-inch cast iron T, which I guess is the soil stack.
Yes.
Pipe that goes up and down.
Right.
And it's developed a very, very slow leak where the joins with the brass fitting. We had a plumber look at it, and he says it's put together with poured lead.
Mm-hmm.
And what they want to do is to... Oh, there's another problem here, and that's that it's located very close to where a floor and a ceiling come together.
Mm-hmm.
And what they want to do is to cut the whole thing out, including some demolition work, and they want to charge about $2,500 for that, and that doesn't include the repairs of the walls and floors afterwards. And so what I'm wondering is how effective it would be to take something like plumber's epoxy or liquid steel or something and press around the joint.
If you can get it clean and dry, it should work for quite a while. It is not what I would consider a permanent repair, but certainly if you can get the thing cleaned up, plumber's epoxy, I think, should work.
Okay, because I'm kind of reluctant to do what they want to do,
mm-hmm.
which is a major chug.
They're looking at fixing it the right way with very long-term effects, but that's not always the most economical thing to do.
Well, hardly. How long do you think this would last? 10 years or so?
Probably.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Let's go on to rural St. Joe for another caller here. This is line two.
Good morning. My problem pertains to mold on roofing shingles. And my first question is, do I need to be concerned?
Just looking at the discoloration, the black discoloration?
It's primarily green.
Okay. It will shorten the life of the shingles somewhat. This is essentially a moss. Actually, if you went up there with a garden sprayer and sprayed it with dandelion spray, well, that would probably take care of it because it is a green plant. The way to keep it from recurring is to go up there with a strip of copper or zinc about 2 to 3 inches wide and slip it under the edge of the top row of shingles. And you hold it in place with a little roofing cement or something or other. And the acid rain will create enough copper or zinc oxide that will wash down, and that will kill it off.
Okay. So I don't have to use use nails to puncture the strip. I can just put it in with sealant?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The lumber yards carry a zinc strip called Shingle Shield. It's made for when you are shingling, but there's no reason at all why you can't tuck it under and hold it in place with a dab of roofing cement in the cuts.
Yeah, very good. Okay, and this, now you said a dandelion spray to...
In other words, 2,4-D.
Oh, okay. Okay, got it. Okay, good. Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, thanks. Is that the kind of, does that primarily occur in places where areas of the roof are shaded and that just doesn't get good
sun? A lot of
sun?
Times it does, yes. And some of it, the black stuff is mildew, and that certainly is more of that. We also find that when the local coons, squirrels, et cetera, have left their deposits up there, we end up with black streaks coming down again because they are supporting the mildew growth.
Uh-huh. Okay. We'll go next to a caller in Vermilion County and line number 4. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. I have a mildew problem on the inside of my ceiling right near the eaves, just in one small area. Mm-hmm. And it seems to just appear and disappear. And my only thought is that I had an extra 6 inches of fiberglass batting put into the attic space, and I wonder if just in that one strip it's too close to the roof or joists or whatever you call those things.
Well, no, the problem is they didn't get it out all the way. But if the insulation doesn't extend out over the top of the wall, some cold air gets there, and then you will get some condensation because you'll get a cold spot, and then a little mildew will grow. Sometimes it's merely dirt that's attracted to the wet surface. Usually it will wash off.
Uh-huh.
And it usually means that that insulation just hasn't been shoved out quite far enough.
Oh, so it's not far enough.
Right.
So...
Now, what you really need to do is to make sure that they installed air chutes, which will keep an opening between the overhang and the attic to let air move, but then you can pack the insulation against the bottom of the air chute so it doesn't block that airflow, and that should take care of the problem.
So have air chutes installed along the whole periphery?
Yes, sir. Well, I would say you can probably install it in about every other rafter space, something like that, and then just push the insulation tight out over the wall.
Air chutes, and a roofer would do that?
A roofer or an insulation contractor.
All right, then. Thank you very much.
Okay, very good. And next is back here in Urbana, line 3. Hello.
Hi, I have a plumbing problem. I've started to get some water in the basement. And where I believe it's coming in is where the water meter is at. And I'm hearing a little hissing from the from like down underneath, and it's a crawl space where the water meter is located. And I don't see any water, at all in the crawl space. And what I'm fearful of is maybe the pipe underneath the meter is leaking, and that's why the water is coming from underneath the cement floor. Could that be a possibility, and what are the ballpark figures in getting something like that fixed?
Okay, now, the water service is coming into the crawl space through or under the foundation wall, coming up to the meter?
Yes, that's correct.
And is the soil surface under the meter wet?
No, I don't. I mean, underneath the meter, it's all dry but then where the meter is located at and where the crawl space, there's another 3 feet of that you'd have to go down to be at the same floor level as the basement floor.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And what I'm seeing is water starting to, it's the last week and a half I noticed a little water, but the last 2-3 days, it's carpeted, and you can just see the carpet is a lot wetter. And then if you put your ear... by the wall, you can actually kind of hear like the meter running, or like more water starting to it sounds like something is leaking.
Okay, well, it's possible that you've got a leak where a pipe is going through the wall, but in all probability, that probably isn't where it's coming from.
Okay.
You have part basement, part crawl space.
That's correct.
And I have a feeling that we're getting some leakage where the basement foundation and the crawl space foundation join.
Okay.
And this could be water from the outside. It's easy to tell whether this water is coming from a pipe leak or whether it's coming from groundwater, in that you can have the water company come out and check, and they check for chlorine in the water.
Okay.
If the water has chlorine in it, it's theirs. and there's a leak someplace. If it is not chlorinated, it's probably an outside groundwater problem.
All right. Even I've never had problems with water at all. All of a sudden, boom, it just could just come on that quick.
Well, did nothing extraordinary happen, like a downspout come disconnected or something like that?
No, nothing like that. Everything's been well protected, and I have never had water. And it's only right now around where the meter is located at about.
Okay, well, as I say, your water company should be able to check the water for chlorine, so they'll know whether it's theirs or whether it's groundwater.
Okay. All righty. All right, thanks a lot. And if by chance it's let's say it's their water, what would you say to be able to fix something like that? I know
it all depends on where it is, because the water line from the street all the way to the house is yours.
Right.
So it's a matter of getting a backhoe in, digging the thing out, and replacing it.
Okay.
And that's not inexpensive. I know, I've had it done.
Yeah, roughly, I mean, I know it's hard to, but if you're looking at like about 40 feet from the.
Oh, we lost the call,
I think. But essentially, you could easily get into a couple thousand if they had to dig the whole thing up.
Okay. Well, if the leak, it sounded like from the way the caller was describing it, that the leak would have been fairly close to the house, would you really have to dig up the whole
line? Should not have to, no.
Okay. No. You could start by digging down by the foundation.
And dig down by the foundation and see where it's coming from.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And as far as the water company is concerned, then that pipe, if it's on your property,
it's all yours.
It's all yours. So if something goes wrong with it,
from the main to the house is yours.
Okay. And what if something goes wrong with the water meter? Does that belong to them, or is that also yours?
The meter itself belongs to them.
Okay. So then if something goes wrong with that, then... They fix it, and that's
right.
Their thing. But otherwise, that pipe that carries the water, that's yours.
From the main into the house is all yours.
That's yours. All right. Our guest this morning, Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He's on this program every month. Always on a Monday, we talk about home maintenance. And if you have questions, you are welcome to call in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll-free anywhere. You can hear us around Illinois, Indiana. That's 800-222-9455. The next person in line here is in Aurora, and it's line number one.
Yes, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I have two questions. I have a drain down the basement, and I used to have I don't know what to name these things, but it was fixed so that when the water backed up, it would go up this pipe and seek its level. And then the basement wouldn't
right.
flood.
Right, but essentially a standpipe.
What are you calling it?
A standpipe.
A standpipe. Can you buy those made already, or do you have to have it put together by a plumber?
It depends on how your floor drain fixture itself is made. Generally, you'll have to have a plumber.
Oh, okay. So that's a standpipe. Thanks for the word. The other thing I wanted to say was, my son just moved into a different house. They had a tri-level house, which I don't understand tri-levels. I just don't. There's a bathroom upstairs and there's a bathroom downstairs and none on the main floor, which I think is a great mistake. And we always had a problem getting my mother to the bathroom, either up or down. And so they moved into a different house, and it's 20 years old. And one of the things they were looking for was a bathroom on the first floor.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to visit, and my mother has a smaller wheelchair. It's called a companion wheelchair. And the second time I took it to the bathroom, I had to take the leg rest off. You couldn't get into the bathroom with the leg rest on, and I barely could get into the bathroom myself to assist, etc. And so I said to my son, if this bathroom was just 5 inches wider, it would be better.
Mm-hmm.
And my son said, 5 more inches and I couldn't afford the house. Why do they make everything so tiny?
Well, the National Kitchen and Bath Association has a recommendation that the minimum size for a bathroom door is supposed to be 2 feet 8 inches, or 32 inches wide.
2 feet And how wide the room itself?
Generally speaking, the room itself is a minimum of 5 feet wide.
This was not 5 feet wide.
Well, because that's the length of a tub. If you put a tub across it.
Oh, this is just a downstairs bathroom with a, what do you call it when it just has a toilet and a sink?
Oh, that's just a half bath, yeah.
Half bath.
Yeah. I would agree. They're too small, and most of the builders are still using smaller doors. And almost every set of plans I look at, my recommendation is to put in bigger doors. Because with the aging of the population in this country, in nearly every house will be some time in the life of that house where someone will be at least temporarily disabled.
Yes, yes.
And
I could get in. I just couldn't. I felt so sorry for my mother, banging her knees against everything.
Yes,
you just can't get her in.
Yeah, and this is something that I've worked very hard with builders on, and they're very difficult to convince. They're afraid it will cost them $10 more.
And then my son couldn't afford the house. So I don't mean any malice, but I hope that we get a sick builder one day and realizes the problem.
I hope so.
Bye-bye.
All right, thanks. And it's not just an issue. It also has to do with entrances.
Bedroom doors.
Yeah, it's and I think you're absolutely right. As the population ages, it's going to become more and more of an issue because there will be a lot of the existing housing stock that will be difficult, if not impossible. You know, we live in a very small old house. It has one bathroom, and it's on the second floor. And the stairs are really steep, and that's just that. Some people just simply could not live in the house that we live in for that reason.
That's right. And as I say, the National Kitchen and Bath Association is recommending a minimum of 2'8" doors on bathrooms. I certainly would recommend that as a minimum for a bedroom door. And if I'm working on a new house design, we try and do one bedroom and one bathroom relatively close together, we hope, with 3-foot doors. 3-0, because a person who has been in a wheelchair for an extended period of time and has gotten good at it, yes, they can put a wheelchair through a 2-6 door. However, the amateur driving one for the first time isn't going to make it. it's one of those things. And likewise, we like to have the hallways be at least 3'6" instead of 3'0", so that someone can walk alongside someone to assist them. And if you really need the space that badly, fine, you put bookshelves on one side, so if you need it, you just take the shelves down. But yes, we are doing our best to try and convince people that so-called universal design is a very desirable thing. And there's an awful lot of builders say, well, we've never done it that way before. And that's a continuous problem.
Yeah. Well, we go on. The lines are full. We'll keep talking with folks. And the next caller up is in Urbana, line number 2. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
My question is about my basement drain. And the drain cover is maybe 10 or 12 inches in diameter. And it has holes in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I took that off, and then there's kind of a bowl shape into the floor with about a 3 or 4 inch pipe that comes up out of the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was this cast iron dome shaped cap that went over the pipe part.
Mm-hmm.
And so upon inspection, it looked like it should have been attached to the cover. There were marks there where it looked like it had come undone. So then I put it all back together again, but now I'm wondering if there's this cast iron dome that fits over the pipe, how does the water get into that pipe to drain out? Or should I leave that cast iron dome out of there?
Does the dome fit tightly over this pipe? In other words, this is a dome the same diameter as the pipe?
No, it's bigger than.
Okay, well, that's
over
what.
Over and down over it.
Well, that's what I was figuring, and I think the water just goes in up between the two, and this is to keep objects out of the pipe.
Uh-huh.
So it, I think the water just pools around it in this little basin, and then it flows up over. Once it gets to a certain depth, it will flow up behind that dome and into the pipe.
But it sits down on the floor beside the pipe. It doesn't hang on the pipe. It sits
on the floor, right?
Yeah, on the floor of the basin.
Mm-hmm. And that keeps the dome up above the top of the pipe, so that water can go under it and then into the pipe.
So it just seeps in all the little cracks, is that it?
Well, it'd be a crack, yeah, but it should be all the way around.
If it sits right on the base of the bottom of this basin.
There must be something that holds it up a little bit.
I don't know. Well, anyway, I was just wondering if it's going to work the way it is, because it looks like it.
Pour a bucket of water in it and see, but I think it probably will.
Okay.
If not, you'll just leave the dome off.
Okay, it wouldn't hurt anything to leave the dome off.
No.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Okay,
thank you. Let's go on to next line number 3, and that will be in Champaign.
Hello?
Yes.
We live in a 1.5-story home in Urbana. Nice little old one, sounds like yours, David. It has a full basement, and the shingles are shot, so we're going to have the roof redone this summer. One slope of the roof gets full south exposure. The other side is northern exposure. The question is what to do with rain gutters and downspouts, because the ice buildup in the winter on the south side just freezes in the gutters. And the roofer said, yeah, that just causes problems with your shingles. Just leave those gutters off. But what impact would that have on the basement? Because our basement is bone dry, even in the floods of 93. We didn't have a leak in there at all.
As long as the slope of the dirt is away from the house, it probably won't cause any great problem.
Oh, good.
On my house, what I have done is where the water would drip from the roof, I've dug a trench about 6 inches deep, put a 4-inch perforated tile in it, and backfilled it with gravel, and then taken the tile out and dumped it into what used to be the gutter drain. Therefore, any water that drips off the roof hits the gravel, goes down, goes into the perforated tile, and goes right into the same gutter drain we had before.
Now, our problem is that our gutter drain looks like it's covered over with concrete and sealed up. Is that changeable? I mean, so the gutters had just then gone off and run off onto the driveway or onto the grass, you know.
Well, you can run this pipe off onto the driveway or onto the grass as well. The reason they were sealed up is your house is undoubtedly old enough that the pipes underground have broken.
Okay.
And if you drop a gutter into a broken pipe, you're delivering all your roof water right against the basement wall.
Yeah.
So, but you can carry that out any place you can drain it, whether it's driveway, lawn, whatever, any place where you've got enough slope to drain a 6-inch deep ditch.
Okay, so right where the rain comes off, you did a 6-inch deep trench, and then it was a tile you put in it?
Yeah, a perforated tile.
Perforated tile.
And I lined the ditch with plastic first so that it would not soak down. It would go into the tile and then run off to the other drains.
Well, I have a nice little flower garden there, so we'd have to rethink that. But that sounds like an alternative, because these gutters are just ugly and they're a mess anyway. So I liked when the roofer said that, and then I started thinking, what about our nice basement?
I haven't had gutters in my house in 20 years.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot for your help.
All right. Thanks. Is there any place that you can go to get plans or sort of a step-by-step kind of thing that would show you, if you were going to do that, how you should do it? How do you live without gutters?
I don't know whether the publication of the Small Homes Council is still in print or not. We used to have one that showed how to do that, and I have no idea whether it's still in print.
Mm-hmm. Why don't more people do that? Does it just not occur to them? Is it just we're so into the idea that you have gutters and that's just the way you do it?
I have no idea, but I have no leaf problem or anything else. It just drains into this gravel bed, which is underdrained by this perforated tile. You've got to have a place to drain it to. And many of our lots are unfortunately so flat we don't have any place to drain that tile to. But if you had a tile that was draining gutters, That's where I connect it to.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we will continue here. We're about the midpoint of this hour of focus with Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He's with us every month. We talk about home maintenance, and your questions are certainly welcome. 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. We got somebody here in Peoria on a cell phone, so we'll go right there. Line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I think on the lady with the floor drain problem.
Yes.
I think it's very important that she leave the cap in place. I think that's her trap that keeps the sewer gas from coming into her.
Well, I don't know what it is. It would have to be sitting in water for it to the trap to work.
Yeah, she described the pipe as coming up mm-hmm. above the little bowl.
It's, yeah.
We have one very similar to that, and our metal cap is attached to the perforated cover on the floor drain. And then water will sit in the little bowl and act as a trap to keep the sewer gas from coming mm-hmm. up.
Yeah, it's a variety that hasn't been made in 40 years, probably.
Yeah.
And
if it was in my house, I would epoxy the metal cap to the floor drain cover.
Okay, if it had been attached there, that's a good solution.
Yeah, but she does need to have a trap in there to avoid getting sewer gas in
there. Most of the time, people use their floor drain so seldom that the water all evaporates out of them anyway.
Right, and then the basement begins to smell, and they remember to put a little water in the trap.
Well, either that or else if you really don't use it very often, you put a little mineral oil in it that won't evaporate.
Oh, okay. That's a good idea, too.
So.
Okay, thank
all right.
you.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. Next, we go to Bloomington, line four. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a patio in the back of my house that's somewhat broken up, and I was wondering, I don't know if this is what I was thinking as far as a quick fix was maybe getting a bag of Quikrete or something and just going over it with whatever depth would do it for a short while until I got the money for a deck. Would that work just so I don't keep stepping on those little concrete pebbles?
Well,
not a good idea.
It's very difficult to hold anything that thin. There are some products available on the market that are somewhat epoxy-based. Abocrete is one that you can mix this stuff up and crawl on, and it, generally speaking, holds pretty well.
What was that?
Abocrete, A-B-O-C-R-E-T-E.
Okay.
It's made by Abitron Corporation just over the line into Wisconsin. And you will find them advertised if you check magazines such as Old House Journal or something like this. You will find that those products are advertised there.
Okay, great. And that would hold me for a year or two, you think?
I think it should do better than that.
Great. And one other quick one. I have a lot of centipedes, which just give me the creeps, and I'm wondering, is there any way I could get rid of them without fumigating? I really hate to use chemicals, but, you know, if maybe one time that
Sorry,
would
I'm not an entomologist. I can't help you.
Oh, okay. That's all right, then. Thank you.
All right, thanks. Let's go on to next person is Urbana, number one. Hello.
Hi. With regard to handicapped access for bathrooms and such, I think one of the things we all need to keep in mind is that we, even if we ourselves are younger and not so, and we think of ourselves as immortal still, that we may have friends who have limited access.
Well,
limited
yes,
mobility.
And certainly that's the case. And as I say, nearly every house, sometime in its history, will be occupied with someone who is temporarily disabled, if not permanently.
Well, I like to think of the idea of a visitable house.
Okay.
So that someone, like an elderly relative, who may not live with you, but you may want to be able to invite people in a wheelchair to come visit you.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we're thinking of remodeling some things, and I don't think we can get 36 inches in our hallway, but I'm going to try and make one hallway wider so that... Who knows? I'd rather do it when we're thinking about remodeling than in a crisis situation.
Absolutely. The real problem with wheelchair ramps is that unless you want to build a true ramp, the grading around the house is critical, and you have to have some kind of a threshold, which makes life difficult for someone in a wheelchair. But generally speaking, we can also end up with water running under the doors. And this does really present a problem. But one of the areas in which a lot of work has been done on universal design is in the design of kitchens and baths. And much of that work was done here at the University of Illinois.
Do you have, how do you, getting, changing the subject and talking about your gutters, what do you do about over your doorways and such?
Just put a deflector that will run it to either side. Just put a metal deflector strip there, and it will run off. You know, you only need a 3 or 4 foot strip, and it will run it to the sides.
I was thinking, we don't have, in a couple of places, we can't put the gravel down and so forth because of the way the house works. But I was thinking of having, of opening up one end of the gutters and letting it drop down into a graveled French drain, letting the water drop down, and figuring and thinking that maybe the leaves would also more easily clear out, that the gutters would be less likely to clog.
Well, I wish you luck.
You don't think that's going to work, huh?
I have no problem with running it off to a French drain, except French drains only work well in France. The soil here is so tight that we dig out a hole and we fill it with gravel, and we have one hole's worth of storage capacity, and it doesn't sink. So we have too much clay. Our soil is much too tight here, at least in most places, for French drains to work well. And you've got to have some way of letting that French drain in turn overflow onto a lawn that slopes away from the house, or have a drain tile in the top of it or something or other.
Well, one place where it has worked well is we have it draining onto a gravel path, and on, under the gravel path, we dug out a sloping trench that then leads to a garden that has some drainage.
Well, and certainly, if you have a drain for it, fine, but the clay content of the soil here is so high that, generally speaking, it doesn't soak in very well.
Okay, that's good to keep in mind. Thanks.
All right, thank you. And we go on to line number three, and that's Charleston. Hello.
Hello, thank you very much. I have a range hood that has a very noisy fan. What do you think of the idea of moving the fan up to the upper end of the duct, which ends up in the crawl space above the house? Is there anything particularly problematic about that?
No. Where does it discharge once it's up there?
Just into the open space.
That
was the last time I saw it. I honestly don't remember too clearly. It's been several years since I've been up there, and at that time I wasn't looking at it for that reason, but as the best I recall, it just goes in the open space there.
Well, there certainly is no problem with that. On mine, I ran it all the way through the roof and put the fan on top of the roof.
Oh, I see. One of those ventilators that sometimes they just use to bring the temperature down in the upper crawl space, something like that.
Well, it was designed for exactly that use.
I see.
And they were readily available. It's the same kind of unit that you would mount on the side of a wall or something like that. But I just mounted it on the roof and connected it with a duct to the hood, and we hear almost nothing from it.
Okay, that's exactly what I'm looking for. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
There are some new axial flow fans that you can put in the line in the attic that are perhaps easier to install and hook into a standard 4-inch or 5-inch or 6-inch line. And that also works very well. Fantech is one brand of them.
What was the brand name again?
Fantech.
Okay. I was just thinking of using the one that's there and just simply moving it.
Well, you very well could do that.
I appreciate the alternative, though. Thank you again.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
I guess initially when you said that it was okay to vent that in the attic, I was thinking, I thought that was, you were not supposed to do that, but now I guess I'm thinking it's the vents from the bathroom you're not supposed to vent.
Well, you're not supposed to vent it into the attic in either case. However, and most building codes don't want you to do that. However, we have found over the years that as long as the thing has a grease filter in it, I went to a meeting one time where a builder brought a whole box full of white gloves that he had used to wipe the ends of the of his kitchen vent fans in the attic to prove that nothing was getting up there. If you have a well-ventilated attic, it's not usually a problem. We don't want to blow against the bottom of the roof. We would want it to just go out into the general attic air, because if we are blowing moist air against the bottom of a roof, which is cold, you can get some condensation there. But generally speaking, we don't have any real problems on this. We rarely run into it. The one exception being people who do a lot of oriental cooking with steaming and stir-frying and so on. That's enough moisture. We better be getting it outside the house.
Okay. And still, though, you would say probably it'd be better not to vent the bathroom.
Oh, definitely we don't want a bathroom vent.
Because there you're dealing with much, much more moisture than you produce by cooking.
Yes.
And so there you're just creating a moisture problem by venting that into.
That's absolutely correct. And matter of fact, on bathroom fans, we suggest putting them on a timer, because the fan should run for at least 15, probably 20 minutes after the shower's turned off. Well, by that time, you're dressed and ready to go, and so you don't let the fan run that long.
Yeah, most people don't run them as long as they really should to get that moisture out of there. Okay. We got another caller here ready to go, and others are certainly welcome. We do have about 10 minutes or so left in this part of Focus with Hank Spies. He's here every month, and we do these shows on home maintenance. And if you have a question, some problem, you're not quite sure how to solve it, you give us a call here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Our next caller is in Urbana, line 2.
Hi. Thanks very much. I was wondering about my furnace and our central air conditioner also. They're both functioning, but they're both very old. The furnace about 40 years. Oh, no, it's even more, because it was here when we bought the house. And the central air maybe over 30. And they're still working. The central air uses Freon. Furnace is a gas furnace, and it has the ducts up in the attic. So the vents are in the walls that are, high up, except for a small addition. Anyway, so I'm wondering, I've been reading you should replace these things.
You probably can't afford to keep them, efficiency is so much lower than the units that we're putting in the market now. If you have a furnace that's that old, you are probably at a maximum of 60% efficiency, 50 is more likely. And the new furnaces by federal regulation have to be at least 78%, and they're available up to 92% efficiency.
Well, would it matter that the ducts are in the attic?
As long as they are well insulated, not that much.
Would you try to change things around, though?
I'd have to see the individual installation, but probably not. Probably just make sure that they were well insulated.
Just the insulation. And how about the air conditioner?
Well, the same way, an air conditioner that age is probably producing about 6 BTUs of cooling per watt of electricity, where a new one has to do a minimum of 10, and they're available readily at 12. I understand there's a new one on the market, and I haven't priced it yet, that has an 18. So just replacing the one you have with an SER of 12 means you cut your cooling bill in half. And considering power rates and where power rates are likely to go.
I'm thinking about those, too, of course. Sounds as if we should do that for both of them.
Right.
Yeah.
I replaced my air conditioner even though it was still working because
really?
I'm one of these people that uses air conditioning a lot.
I see. Yeah, well, Right. So, that's very good information. I had a feeling that might be the case, but I didn't realize what a difference there was in the efficiency of what I have and what I could have.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye. Very good.
Bye-bye.
To line one, this is Champaign. Hello.
Sir? One?
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. Good morning. Question about a toilet. Several months ago, I replaced a toilet, or I thought I needed to, and the plumber suggested one of these high-pressure toilets that is a lot more expensive, but long-term it saves a lot of water and so on. And then it's working fine. But then I talked to another plumber, and he says, oh, they're junk, that you shouldn't do that, and that you they have to replace cartridges and all that sort of thing, Kohler, I guess. And they've replaced a lot of those type of toilets. And then I asked the original plumber, and he said, no, it's a Gerber, and they use they have their own patent. They don't use the cartridges. And I wonder if I made a mistake or...
No, I don't think so. There's no question that the major complaint against those type of things is they're noisy.
Yes.
But they do work. Now, when we first started using the low-flush toilets, a lot of them, particularly the lower-priced ones, did not work very well. The design has been refined considerably since then, and most of them work reasonably well. You still will need to double flush occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
But
okay.
I wouldn't have any real objection to the type of unit that you have. They're noisy, but they're quite efficient.
Right. Okay, another quick question. I replaced Ballcock because I couldn't find a sleeve-type fiber anywhere. So I was going to replace that with a Fluid Master, and then in doing that, the plumber couldn't get the valve undone, and he cracked the whole tank. Then we had to get a new toilet, and then it didn't work because it was a 1.6, which I guess there are a lot of complaints about that.
Mm-hmm.
So then on top of that expense, then we had to take the toilet up to find out what was wrong. There wasn't anything. So then he replaced the 1.6-gallon valve with a 3.5 type of thing, and of course it's working fine, but is this it's just one of those believe it or not type of things, I guess.
Well, it's one of those things. 3.5 is what we all used for years. They're not permitted to be manufactured in this country anymore. You've got to get a used one or slip one across the Canadian border.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand there's a considerable black market in plumbing fixtures across the Canadian border for that reason.
Well, then I understood that you could just hold the handle down a little longer, and they wouldn't need to have done that.
That's not necessarily the case. The 1.6 designs are completely different.
Uh-huh.
And as I say, when we first started using 1.6s, we had a lot of problems. The design has been refined considerably, and most of them work reasonably well.
Okay, good enough. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go to somebody else right here, Urbana, line 3. Hello.
Hi. Got a roofing question.
Okay.
Hmm?
Yes.
I got 3 estimates. We're talking about 25 squares, and I'm nonplussed because I got 1 estimate at $3,400 from Mr. Lowball and $9,700 from Mr. Highball, and then in between, $7,400. Isn't that an awfully big spread?
Yes, there may be a considerable difference as to how they detailed it, what they're going to do.
Yeah, well, there's not all that much difference. I mean, the low estimate didn't involve tear off of some of the roof, but it did involve a garage, which the others did not include. But that's the only difference. Same quality of shingle. 25-year shingle, same roofing felt, 30-pound roofing felt, same flashing. I just don't understand how there can be so much difference.
One guy was hungry for work. The others weren't.
Okay.
That can make a big difference.
Yeah. I thought that the 9,700 seemed to be way out of line for...
Sounds like it might be for 25 squares. Yeah, that sounds awfully high unless you've got a real unusual situation.
Mm.
And, of course, the more complicated a roof you have, the more expensive it's going to be because of the flashings involved and this sort of thing.
It's a little complicated, but it's a fairly steep pitch. But, my own estimate, totally unprofessional estimate, was something like 65. But
mm-hmm.
I could be wrong. I don't know. Did that sound 6 or 7 and somewhere in that ballpark? Is that?
Yeah, without seeing it, I can't really tell you. But it sounds like even that's plenty high.
Okay.
You have to doing a full tear-off?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Because you should be able to do a full tear-off and re-roof for somewhere around $250 a square.
Hmm.
So, yes, you see, that would put you in the 6,000 range.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you. And that's a square what? Square foot?
A square of roofing is 100 square feet.
Oh, okay. So that's very confusing. So, all right. So you've got to figure out how many square feet you have. And for every 100 square feet, you're figuring roughly how much?
If you're doing about $250, if you're tearing off two layers of existing ones, completely reflashing, new felt paper, new shingles, so on. Occasionally on a low slope where you can, in areas where you can work without quite so much safety equipment to protect yourself against falling off the roof, then you might be able to beat that a little bit. But OSHA requirements for scaffolding and roof safety these days have run the price of roofing up substantially.
Uh-huh. And, of course, the more valleys there are, you've got dormers, stuff like that,
right.
That gets more...
And it seems like our designers these days seem to be competing as to how many different roof planes can they get on one house. The record of that I have seen is 23.
23, that's pretty good.
Yeah, and I don't want to think of what it's going to cost to re-roof that thing,
mm-hmm.
or what it cost to build in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't always agree with architects on things like
that. Well, I feel now pretty good. Mine's only got four.
Right.
So that shouldn't be too bad.
That's all I have is four.
We're sort of coming down to the end of the show here, and we don't have any callers standing by. Is there any sort of last thing you might like to leave folks with?
Well, by all means, clean all the garbage out of the gutters. Make sure the extensions are on the downspouts. The monsoon season may arrive soon, if it isn't already, and get the drainage away from the house. And that's usually the most important thing. And for heaven's sake, change the air conditioner filter. There's nothing that can do in the efficiency of an air conditioner more than a dirty filter.
Okay. Which is good, probably a good thing to do every well, we've talked about this a lot. Maybe it, depending on what kind of patch maybe you have
right.
in the house.
Anything from two to six times a year, yes.
Right. Okay. Well, look, we do have a caller here, and we'll get one more in for sure in Champaign, line one. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, I have two quick questions. We were talking earlier about the roof. I just wanted to ask, you know, if, for example, if the roof is, it doesn't have to be, you know, like old shingles, don't have to be taken off. If the second layer of shingles can be put on the top of the first one, what kind of estimate can we expect per square?
Usually about $100.
Around $100 or so. Okay, and there's 25-year shingles, 30-pound felt and all those things.
No, you don't put any felt with a second layer.
Not with that. Great, thank you. Mm-hmm. Another quick question. You know, like for a basement, if somebody wants to finish it for a new construction and wants to use, some other alternative source of heating besides the regular heating system, what would you recommend? I mean, like something like maybe what you call those stoves or whatever, you know?
No, you'd probably, I can't imagine that a basement would be very hard to heat. I'd probably use electric baseboards.
Just electric baseboards.
Yeah. But I would do my best to run it off the central heating system.
Oh, use that one, this as an alternative.
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much, sir.
Okay. Right, well, thank you for the call. There, we'll leave it with the promise that next month Hank will be back and we'll do it again. Thanks very much.
Okay.
Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He's here every month on the show, always on a Monday, for these programs on home maintenance.